podcast by Nationals fans for Nationals fans. I'm Susan.
I'm Frank.
And we have a great show for you tonight.
We do. We're going to talk a bit about our trip to spring training, which I think you'll actually, we were just discussing how you might want to, Susan might be only saying a few things, but we're going to talk about spring training. That'll be a great thing for you to talk
about.
Great. World Baseball Classic, going to preview the season. And we have a special guest in studio today, Luigi. Do you want your full name, Luigi?
Just, yeah, Luigi de Guzman, at Ouij, O-U-I-J. You might remember, you might know me as the guy with the Dr. Doom avatar on Twitter.
Yep.
Recently flamed by Buster Olney for my overly correct view of civil litigation, but we'll come to that. Maybe.
Don't ever tell a baseball writer what to think about the law.
It's terrible. It never ends well.
Ouij is also the proprietor, the owner and runner of Natsdramus, the Natsdramus blog. I always spell it wrong, so I have to look it up. It's natsdramus.wordpress.com. And we link
very
to that.
Smart.
Yeah, we link to it. Or yes. If we don't, we will link to it at the end of the day on our blog at nats101.com. But we're gonna go ahead and get started with the show. We're gonna talk about a bunch of things. Let's talk about spring training. Susan, why don't you tell us a bit about our trip to Florida? Because I don't remember
Didn't
much of it.
Did we already do an episode about that?
Did we?
I think we did. Because then we talked about the World Baseball Classic.
Oh, we did. Okay, so our trip to Florida was awesome.
I mean, that was a couple weeks ago. It was cold.
I don't think we've done a podcast since then. I don't care. It was freezing cold the whole weekend. That's what I wanted to get out.
But it was really fun to see the 2013 Nats play. And I learned how to keep score.
Which
was like the big thing for me that weekend.
Yeah.
It was really fun. And I even bought, what was it, a $7 program?
She bought the Braves program
just for
the scorecard.
You know, that is one of the, you know, for those of you listening, that is one of the greatest perks so far about Nats Park is that the scorecard comes free.
In the inside pitch.
In the inside pitch. And it has gotten a lot better since 2005. So all you Nats fans, don't forget your stub pencils or your pens. The scorecard is free and it's excellent.
Didn't you feel like you really watched the game completely differently?
Yeah.
You were saying like it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially the first time I was kept score, I was really paying attention to the pitches and whether it was a ball or a strike and where it was and all those things. And at the end of the game, I'm like, oh, that's high, that's low, that's the curve, that's the slider. So I ended up really
Within the course of a game, you had learned in an umpire strike zone, which is, you know, sometimes an umpire's can't
learn
an umpire's strike zone.
And I just love doing administrative work, so like filling out forms and things. And to me, this was like filling out a form, and I just love doing it. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I have a question about keeping score. I have a friend of mine who actually he keeps beautiful score actually, and he refuses to do it when he goes to Nats games because it feels like he gets too into the game. He always second guesses the manager, and he ends up managing along with the game. Did you feel a couple of innings in that you had a sense of, well, why, you know, he's can't get it over the plate, you know, pull him, or that's too many pitches? Or?
Well, I think because it was a spring training,
uh-huh.
I knew that they may have been working on certain things, and I didn't have to worry about that too much. I don't know how I would feel at a real game.
So it's spring training for the scorekeeper too.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Totally. Yeah. You know, we had a good time doing that. And it was, I mean, you were just like calling back, you know, you knew what the guy had done in the last inning, which is the first time in baseball history, as far as I'm concerned, that you were like, you know,
my baseball history.
Right, right. I mean, you've been enjoying and watching the games, but it was really kind of cool
it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I kind of became antisocial.
A little,
I was like not talking to Frank, and I was.
I know we had other people coming up and saying hi, and as we saw, Star EO, I can never say her name, but Star was out there, and Jen Schiffman was. We spent the whole weekend with Jen Schiffman. Jen Schiffman saw us in good form at an Irish bar. that was fun. It was freezing. It was freezing
it was
all
really
weekend.
Cold, yeah.
Kennedy Space Center was also excellent. I think that's better than Disney World, if you're wondering. I think go to Kennedy. You'll learn something.
It was pretty cool. But enough about that, because I feel like we have actually covered this.
Okay, well, yeah. I thought maybe we would.
If we haven't, then we'll touch
on
it.
I still got to post the photos from it.
But speaking of spring training,
yes.
Just to kind of give those folks listening at home right now, we are 6 games back.
In the group fart league?
In the group fart league. We have won 11 games and we've lost 14.
And there are a couple of ties in there, you know.
There are.
You split the points from those. Those are important.
You know,
this is true.
Rewarding us for losing. That's all. These points, these 1-point wins, you know. OTLs.
Jeez. Okay. Capitals. That would,
imagine if baseball ended with a home run derby. If like after not after 10 innings, they just did a home run derby.
How many home runs you can hit.
Yeah, and that would make the Marlins the most feared team in the
They would
National
win
League
so
East.
Many games if they could just get to the 10th.
Just get to the home run derby.
So are you worried about our poor group fart standings?
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, we know that this is where they really start working on some of their skills, but it does concern me just because Atlanta is they're 18-12 right now. They're only 1.5 games back.
Yep.
From Baltimore. So like those are two teams, especially Atlanta, who kind of
I think
trouble.
The fact that Baltimore is on the top of the Grapefruit League should tell you everything you have to worry
and
about.
And that was my next point was I'm not too worried about it, but it just kind of makes you a little nervous, I guess, going into it.
Yeah.
I don't know what they did last year at spring training. I mean,
that's the point, isn't it?
Right.
You know,
no one cares about spring training. I mean, at the end of the day.
They had different guys missing. Nobody put together their things all at once. I mean, what I saw, they look more or less good when they're – you know, individual pieces all look good. They didn't have, you know, Ryan Zimmerman at third base the whole first three
right.
weeks of the season. They didn't have a proper catcher in the back. I mean, they had, like, you know, Wilson Ramos batting cleanup. You know, they were playing under American League rules. There's a million reasons you could, you know, they only had their starter going two innings.
Well, I mean, that happens sometimes, too.
Right, know? That does happen sometimes, too. But it happens on purpose in February.
I mean, John Lannon isn't on the club anymore.
He is kind of because he's going to help us in some Phillies games probably.
Ouch.
Yeah, I wouldn't put too much into it.
Well, good.
But there are a few things that we were talking about beforehand. Luigi brought up. I keep calling you by your.
No, no,
Twitter
it's
handle.
All right. Everybody calls me Luigi.
Okay. Really. You brought up Dan Heron and some of his velocity is not as velocitized as you'd like it.
Right. Sorry. The. It's interesting that, I mean, I haven't had the pleasure of going down to Vieira and sitting in the wind, but like you guys have. But, you know, just listening to the games such as they are and reading Twitter, they're always friendly scouts. I imagine them that they look like Casper the Ghost with radar guns.
Nice guys.
Right. They're always friendly scouts that are telling Kilgore or Wagner or one or the other of the beat writers what Heron's velocity is. And it has gotten as low as 85.
Yeah.
And it has gotten as high as 91. That's the fastball. That's a four-seam fastball now, which, listeners, if you know, don't pay attention to the radar gun during the games, Strasburg throws a changeup at around 90 or 91.
Right. His, quote, slow pitch is the 91.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the slow pitch from Strasburg. So it worries me a little bit that a pitcher like Heron, who depends so much on the fastball and the location of that fastball, has his velocity dropping the way that it has been the past couple of years. I think when Rizzo signed Heron this offseason, it was a bet. If Heron's velocity gets up to that 91-92 level, the way he was throwing around 2008-2009, there's a pretty good chance that he is the Dan Heron that, you know, that beat Jordan Zimmerman. That was in 2010, excuse me, that beat Jordan Zimmerman in that
right.
epic pitcher's duel out in Los Angeles, or excuse me, Anaheim.
Right.
But, you know, if his velocity gets down to like 80, 88 at most.
2012 average 88.5.
Right, there it is.
Yeah, and that in 2012 was a really tough year for Dan Heron, which...
I mean, he got shelled, and
yeah.
he got shelled. His back hurt. I mean, all sorts of terrible things happened to him. I hope he works on stuff in his Zen master way.
he doesn't seem bothered by it, which is true. So.
No, I look forward to receiving the Dharma from Dan Heron later this season, because golly, if his fastball velocity is down, he's going to be. I mean, he's going to be Yuni Maya.
Yeah, which is not a good thing to be.
Well, I mean...
It is if you're in Cuba and you're winning all sorts of...
Well, as long as it's not hot.
Right.
As long as it's not hot.
Yeah. Yeah, Heron, we profiled him on the blog, nats101.com, which we are finally done with Get to Know and At. I was very excited to That was a bit of a marathon for me, and I hadn't really blogged like that in a few years. And so to have like a daily happen, which
it
then
turned a good thing for you.
Which then, yeah,
it kept you out of my hair.
Yeah,
it kept you busy.
But the second half of his season last year was better than his first. So there's hope that, you know, maybe his back will never be perfect, but after a certain amount of stretching, which we got to through last year, he'll pick it up this year. I remember Gio's first outing against the Cubs was not very good. So I'm not going to read, you know, as I was saying before we started, you know, Giancarlo Stanton's going to hit his bombs off of people. And if he hits them off his Heron, okay. It's just if everybody's hitting bombs off of Heron and he can't get people out, you know, by May or something, then that's going to, I'm going to start to worry.
Yeah, which means, of course, the return of Yunesky Maya to Nats Park.
Because we don't have a sixth starter. So.
Correct. No, not at all.
Chris Young is left now, right?
As of this broadcast, I am not sure.
I will double check that because I'm pretty sure he is gone from the Nationals organization. But other than that, I've been pretty encouraged with what I've seen. Zimmerman's hit the ball well. He's been playing third base now. That was something I wanted to see. I have not watched him play third base with my own eyes. Not that my eyes would tell me very much. I've been encouraged that Wilson Ramos has been behind the plate a few times, which is, you know, another big injury that he's coming back from. Denard Span's been very fun to watch in spring training. He's sort of he got caught stealing the other day, but he's been kind of fast and moving around.
He's turning into quite the on-base machine in the group fart league.
Yeah.
Good. That's what we wanted.
Yeah, and we just want him to carry that over to the National League.
Correct.
Which if I don't think we talked about the group fart league before, but MLB TV abbreviates grapefruit GRPFRT, which of course is
it just looks like group fart.
It's group fart. So.
What you didn't see over there, listeners, was Frank's puzzled expression as he was trying to read the score ticker.
Yes, that did happen.
Yeah, Wikipedia has not updated his information, but they're not the most reliable either.
Well, if Wiki doesn't know nothing, it doesn't exist.
No one else needs to know.
I mean, the hive mind is all.
Oh, but on Facebook it says they're no longer in a relationship. So. So that must be true.
Go to Facebook for everything.
World Baseball Classic finished up. The Dominican Republic. Speaking of well-oiled machines, they just sort of tore through everything.
Plátano power, baby.
Kaboom. The U.S. fought valiantly. They couldn't get over the hump against. Was it Puerto Rico? Was the first game they blew?
It was Puerto Rico. It's probably no coincidence that the U.S. offense kind of faltered without David Wright there. As my brother put it, David Wright must have thrown out his back from carrying the U.S. team.
Yeah. He's going to be out the first few weeks of the year, right?
Yes. There had been some speculation, I think, that he was going to try and make it for the opener, but that
it's
doesn't...
Doubtful. That, yeah, it's a long season. You're not going to rush him back. I feel badly. I know he's a Met, and it'll help the Nationals in some sense, but I never... Especially when a guy's playing for the U.S. or, you know, playing for a national team and something that... I really like the World Baseball Classic. I like that they do that.
Well, it's an extremely. I mean, it's. I had a long and pretty acrimonious Twitter discussion with Dave Nichols, whom I love really.
Dave's a great guy.
Yeah, Dave's one of the great Nats writers. One of the people, as it were.
Indeed.
And he was of the opinion that the entire World Baseball Classic was a fraud drummed up by Major League Baseball to sell ad time in the middle of March when otherwise nobody would be watching. And that's true. But
it's true of all sports. But
well,
anyway.
it's particularly true of this,
right?
Because it was broadcast in English anyway on only MLB Network. And MLB Network was using it to promote some awful television show involving Harold Reynolds.
Oh, God, every 4 seconds.
That was bad. It was bad. And of course, MLB Network was trying to make Matt Vasgersian happen as a broadcaster.
No.
Who was, you know, and let's be fair, the World Baseball Classic doesn't really attract the kind of hype and excitement that the FIFA World Cup would or the Olympic Games does.
No, but I think it's better than the Pro Bowl. I don't know if it gets the viewership.
The Pro Bowl is a very low. The NFL Pro Bowl is a very low bar to clear here.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, you know, now to the good of the World Baseball Classic. I think it was mentioned during the competition that at some point something like 51% of all televisions in Japan were tuned in to to a game. And of course, in Japan, they don't have this nonsense cable TV. Everybody gets it over the air.
Right.
Which is kind of cool if you think
Japan
about it.
Japan does some really cool things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, so the World Baseball Classic, I think we can say with a straight face, is big in Japan. It was big in Taiwan. It was big in Korea.
I think it was big in the Caribbean.
It was extremely big in the Caribbean, and you know, to the extent that there are European European audiences tuning in the Netherlands, at least it attracted some small press attention. Even the British papers covered it, or at least ran the Associated Press, stories. So it creates a spectacle, which is good. There's the potential of developing more talent. My native Philippines was, of course, eliminated early in the qualifying. But you know, if it generates interest in otherwise marginal baseball markets, it means more prospects and more people playing baseball, and perhaps more unusual finds from the far corners of the world that might make their way into the big leagues, and that's good.
Yeah, I think that it's important to keep in mind that it is a world event, and while it might not rate the way that people in America are used to things being a big event, that it is a big deal elsewhere in some of the countries that play. And that's a good thing as for all the reasons you kind of laid out. The other thing that crossed my mind, which just escaped my mind.
It happens at this age. Don't worry.
All right. I remember what I was going to say now. We had a really excellent article, the first article by Robert Court Swift at R-Core Swift on Twitter. We call it Holding Court. He didn't come up with that name. I came up with that name because I'm just the editor, and I just like, you know what? I'm going to give your thing a cheesy title. Holding Court it is.
It's good to be boss.
It is good to be the boss. It's also bad. It's also tough to be the boss because everyone yells at you. But Court wrote a really great article about the World Baseball Classic, that he likes it, and that some of what he would do would be to move parts of it after. First of all, he wanted to be more rotated rather than have it split up across the world all at once. You know, steal the FIFA idea of have it in Japan this year, mm-hmm. have it in Korea the next year, or have it in the Dominican the next 3 years. And the other thing would be to move it after after the season is over, because you would have a certain number of players that are not in the playoffs that would end up in these tournaments that, you know, everybody's warmed up. There's much less risk of injury at the end of the season than at the beginning, you know, because people have been playing for a while. And that his idea, that was kind of his idea. Agree with it, disagree with it. We had a couple of comments on the blog. But the other thing with the World Baseball Classic, one of the criticisms is that it is a single elimination tournament. I mean, there's the pool play at the beginning,
right? And the double elimination secondary phase, right?
But ultimately, it is a head to head, one game at a time. It's not played like baseball in the States, where you're in series and you know, for three or four games or seven or five games if it's the playoffs. And so it's sort of the same criticism that the NCAA tournament gets. You know, Georgetown plays Florida Gulf Coast, and Florida Gulf Coast just has to get one good night in. You know, out of 10 games, Georgetown's going to win 9. They're probably going to win 95 out of 100 against Florida Gulf Coast. But, you know, because it's a single time, you're going to get that one game. And so is it really a fair tournament when you take a sport that is played in series and put it in single elimination format?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time in Britain, and of course this question has already been asked and answered a generation ago in the cricket playing world. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with cricket, but you know the most traditional form of cricket is test matches, and one game, one cricket match in that situation would last 5 days. Now, this is, you know,
you think Red Sox Yankees is a long game?
Oh, it I mean, this you know, these things are epic. I mean, they're you can watch one day of it, but it's something that you follow in the newspaper. It's you know, it has this glacial feel of a world historical event, you know, to get all you know.
Yeah, British about it.
Well, I mean, you know, but it's it takes a lot of time, frankly, and you know, and not everybody has the time to worry about whether, you know, whether there's insufficient light at Edgbaston or so or whatever it is. So they decided to get more interest in the game in the 70s. They went to a 1-day cricket format. Where each side had a limited amount of time to score runs, and that format has become very popular. Actually, there's a great deal of international cricket played in a 1-day format now, and most domestic cricket in Britain and Australia and so forth is played in the 1-day format, and it's a very different game. The way that you approach a batter is different. The way that a batter approaches his time batting is very different. He has to be much more aggressive,
right?
Because you don't have the you're running out of time,
right?
So you know, purists sniff about this. You know, it's not cricket, you know, but it is interesting, and it's a kind of cricket, and it brings interest to the game. And it's a game in its way, in its own right. And the World Baseball Classic is like a shorter form of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So, you know, with all of its... Once you realize that those limitations are something inherent to a short form of the game, that the pitch counts are inherent to the short form
right.
of the game, the way that you manage is different. And I found myself watching, particularly in towards the end, you know, with a very deep appreciation for the difference that the short form of baseball... it imposed.
Yeah, it creates it. Well, it's a variation on the sport, like you've been saying. I know rugby does it too. I mean, they're more with the number of players on the field at any time. There's like, you know, sevens and
right,
and
exactly.
all sorts of different things. And if you need a laugh, go Google double diamond baseball.
Oh right, yes, yeah. NPR did a great Hang Up and Listen.
I think Hang Up and Listen was one of their afterballs.
Did a great feature on that.
I met Stefan Fatsis since the last time we recorded, and I think I might have said this before. If one day this podcast approached anything like Hang Up and Listen, I would feel super happy about all of that, just because they're the best podcast in the world.
Well, I mean, yes, I agree. But again, it's a different. The WBC is baseball. Frank, but not as we know it, to paraphrase Bones McCoy, and or was it Spock? I don't even care.
I'll look it up. You make your point. I'll look up which Star Trek figure said that.
I mean, it's baseball, but not as we know it, and I think it should be enjoyed on its own merits and not compared to a major league game, because it's not. I mean, and you wouldn't compare a Carolina League game or a Sally League game to a major league game for
right.
the same reason.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the size of the roster in the Sally League or the Carolina
right.
League.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. It was Spock. Science Officer Spock.
Fascinating.
It's life, Jim, but not as we know. Yeah. So that was that's the World Baseball Classic. Congratulations to the Dominican. I mean, the lost in that. You're right. It is a take it for what it's worth. Different variation on the sport, and it shouldn't be the world base. It shouldn't be MLB, because it is its own thing. So I'm kind of happy that we have more people with it. We were looking for the beer opener. It's our fault. That's why I was stuttering with my words.
Multitasking is hard.
It is, and I'm doing like four things here. I just need to stop juggling these two balls in my left hand. It would probably make everything easier.
But that's what makes everything go, don't you know?
Yes. We're big fans of BarnesandNoble.com. If you have a website and you'd like to advertise it, we could pretend we were advertising BarnesandNoble.com right here. Go to BN.com to see somebody who's not our sponsor.
That's right. Absolutely.
Someone we just like.
Absolutely no affiliation whatsoever.
But speaking of other websites, I think it's time to get to our learning portion of the day. So don't run away, Susan. We're going to see if you can follow this, it's going to be good. But it is now, and has been for a little while. Well, with ESPN, it's always prediction time. There are two things you can always do in sports. You can always make a list, and you can always predict.
Well, you can also cover whatever Tim Tebow's doing these days.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If you could make a list of Tim Tebow predictions, that's the ultimate paradigm.
It's unbelievable.
Baseball Tonight's putting together a list of 500 baseball players that they're like writing and or televising, which seems incredibly stupid. Like, I felt like the best 100 players in baseball was kind of overkill.
That caused a great deal of very acrimonious debate at my place of work.
They do
say
that on purpose. They're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to drop this guy 10 points. Because you know why? Everyone will be angry about it. But predictive analysis is something that's pretty awesome, and it's really sort of blown up in the spotlight with guys like Nate Silver in the political sphere, really not just being, you know, a talking head, but actually, you know, being really right and having really good reasons why he was right. You know, my venomous hatred of Georgetown is why I picked Florida Gulf Coast in my bracket. It's not going to work every time. I just managed to get this one right. You know, Nate Silver does these, you know, mathematical things. He was a guy who came up with Pecota in baseball before that. So this is actually why we brought Luigi on the blog, is because Weege, over at naturdomus.wordpress.com, has become sort of Nats famous. I'd say, you know, internet famous, a little Twitter Nats famous, for his predictions regarding the Washington Nationals, how many wins they're going to get. So I guess we could talk about, I guess, generally the idea of prediction and then sort of talk a bit about what you do. I mean,
okay. Okay. It's good that you bring up Nate Silver and Pecota, because I actually started Nostradamus out of frustration. And the frustration I had when I started Nostradamus was that I was not very intelligent.
It happens to the best of us.
And my lack of intelligence is that in my day job, I'm a lawyer. We are not known for our quantitative analysis skills.
No, that's what paralegals and expert witnesses are for.
Exactly. And before I was a lawyer, I was an historian, and we're even less known for our quantitative analysis skills. But I needed some way to understand the baseball that I was watching. And after having suffered through a lot of bad baseball here in Washington, frankly, there was a lot of bad baseball in Washington. I came to a point of great vulnerability, and I thought to myself, there's got to be some way that I can make myself feel okay about watching this baseball team.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have become, you know, warped and misshapen and misanthropic, like certain other Nats bloggers had become.
there are a few people who were not, you know, they were turned evil from the 05 to 09.
Yeah, you see a lot of it actually in Nats town. A lot of people are gnarled and bitter and they harbor all kinds of ill will about things like, you know, Nook Logan, for instance, or Justin.
He was not a good guy. I've managed to move past him personally.
Well, I mean, I think that the great thing about Nook Logan is that now we can all laugh about it.
Yeah.
And it brings us together in a way that.
Where is he going? What is he doing? What was he thinking?
Right. I mean, and we can sit around and have a laugh about it. But at the time, it was terrible. And so I thought to myself, okay, there's got to be some way of knowing how much I can reasonably expect out of the Nats, so that my heart isn't just ripped out and just torn to pieces. I didn't want to be hurt again, is what I'm telling you, really.
Right. You were building, you know, trust but verify. Just, you know, you want to love, but
doveraya no proveraya. Anyway, the important thing is that I needed to find some sort of baseline. So there are lots of baselines out there. There are lots of ways to get a sense of how many games that your home team is going to win. Of course, your first stop is going to be a site like ESPN,
right?
Because you don't know any better. And they over at Bristol, they use very sophisticated methods, like asking Buster Olney.
Right, and Buster Olney just goes, "I've heard of these guys, and I haven't heard of these guys,"
And
I'm going to give the guys I heard of more weight. Yeah,
and they'll come up, and there'll be power rankings or projections or whatever.
Right.
Okay. So that's one way.
Punditry.
Right. That's one way. Right. And then the other way that you kind of look at that, and then you it disenchants you, right? Because it's not it there's something not okay about this. You know what the hell do you commit? What the hell does Buster know about it? He's not here. He doesn't know us.
Yeah. Well,
it's an extremely emotional process, I found.
Yeah.
And so I moved on, and I
never get so angry as when someone, a national writer, clearly doesn't understand my team.
Exactly.
You know, it's just like you just looked at the box score.
Right. You know, who do you think you are?
Right.
I mean, you haven't felt the pain that I feel right now.
Right.
You haven't sat through the rain delays I've sat through to watch a terrible, lousy team, right? So you go on, you see there are other sites. There's the excellent FanGraphs, which is the lifeblood to any baseball nerd.
Yeah, I've overwriting Get to Know It Now, I have really come to appreciate FanGraphs. And Baseball Reference, but FanGraphs more so in the sense that what they categorize and look at is just so much deeper.
Well, it's not that it's deeper, but it's very well organized and very easy.
Yeah.
And they have projections.
Yeah.
And so FanGraphs will tell you after a number of ways that, you know, how good Bryce Harper's going to be and how good Dan Heron's going to be and all of these things, right? But that's not okay because it's not going to tell you how many times Charlie Slows is going to go bang zoom.
Right.
It's not. So you go one further, and maybe you have an uber baseball nerd in your social circle who subscribes to Baseball Prospectus.
I don't subscribe, but I bought the prospectus this year, though.
Right, yes, and he will pass you on the Picota Picota analysis by, you know, as built by Nate Silver.
Would you like to know what the Picota system is, Susan? You've just been a little quiet. I thought maybe we'd bring you back in here.
I just like to watch.
Okay. she's taking a step back. The Picota system, it's Pecota, P-E-C-O-T-A, right?
Yeah, it's named after some reasonably obscure player.
Right. The system essentially, built by Nate Silver, compares baseball players of a certain type to historical
analogs,
people who were like him previously. And so it takes everything into account, like body type, previous statistics, height, weight, all that stuff.
It's just age at the start of the season.
And it sort of builds a curve that says, okay, at this age, he's most like these three players, and this is what these three players did in the next year.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. And it's more than just sort of like, all prediction is a bit of guess, but it's one more layer of data that you can add on to the data you already have.
Correct. Now, my problem with Picota, of course, was that it's obscure to me. Again, I'm not very smart.
Right.
I can't derive it for myself.
Yeah, you can't do it yourself. It's proprietary, and even if you could, it would take forever.
Exactly. So I needed some way in the middle of winter to look at what was going to happen with the Nationals or what I thought was going to happen with the Nationals and figure out a way to, you know, to feel okay.
Right.
And it occurred to me that we do have one remarkably good predictor of team performance, and this is the Pythagorean win expectation.
Okay.
Okay, deep breath, readers, because this is about to get hairy.
And listeners.
That's right, the readers and listeners. I feel like I'm doing this for dictation. Anyway, the Pythagorean win expectation was one of those things that Bill James, the noted baseball sage,
he's kind of like the Socrates of statistics. Maybe
I see him more as like the Confucius of baseball. He's a sage. He has, you know, he has his circle, and then various schools of thought have disputed with him. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Confucius is cool.
So, you know, you
bring it to the East. That's fine.
Right. I mean, it's in the World Baseball Classic form.
Right.
Bill James discovered that there is a very strong relationship between the number of runs, the ratio of runs scored to runs allowed, and the ultimate win-loss ratio of the ball club.
So just to put it in Susan Durham, shockingly, if you score more runs than the teams you play, that's a really good predictor on whether your season went well or not.
I can't believe that's what happens with that statistic.
Right. Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but that's the.
I got it.
It's actually
start there.
It's actually shockingly easy. Now, what he started doing was plugging. He started plugging runs scored and runs allowed in, and started messing with it in not a very systematic way, which is why I like Bill James. He he's kind of straddles science and alchemy in baseball. Just
a little slapping it up on the wall to see what sticks.
Right. It's very Isaac Newton, as you can tell. I'm very big into the history of science. And
former historian, so you know.
Well, yes.
And probably still a historian.
Of some sort.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is this. We have a very good way of predicting how well a team will do in terms of winning percentage. One loss percentage can be predicted by taking the square of runs scored and dividing it by the square of runs scored plus the square of runs allowed. Now...
I'm sorry, what?
Right, that's what I thought the first time I looked at it.
There's a lot of mathematical terms.
It's a little easier when you're looking at it.
I teach lower elementary primary grades. That.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's a lot easier once you've seen it on the page.
Yeah, I'm looking at it here. And
need to see it, okay.
I think when you're looking at it, you can understand what the deal is. You can understand what the values are that you're plugging in. It's a little
right now. It's they call it the Pythagorean win expectation because of all the squares, all the second
right.
order exponents. But it has absolutely nothing to do with Pythagoras or triangles or trigonometry or really anything. In fact, advanced statistical research has found that the right exponent is something like to the power of 1.86. But who has time for that shit?
Right.
So. But here's the takeaway. When you crank through that equation with runs scored and runs allowed, you end up with a winning percentage.
Right.
500, 400, 250, whatever it is, you end up with a win percentage, and you know that there are 162 games in a season.
So you get your percentage in there,
and
you...
Then you know how many times Charlie Slows will go bang zoom.
Right.
Or should go bang soon.
So now you have this formula, and it's a tested formula, and different people have tweaked it differently. But all you would have to do now is come up with how many runs you think the team would score and how many runs you think they would give up.
Correct. That's the interesting part.
Those are the two exponents that you need to figure out.
Well, those are the bases. This is the nature of Nostradamus. Is really trying to make it so that I can understand it, and I understand baseball best if I imagine myself watching baseball, shockingly. So the way that it works is this. When you go to the park, right, you settle in, D.C. Washington has sung the anthem, everybody has run out, and now we're ready to play baseball. So the first thing that happens when you're sitting at Nats Park is that the visiting team will bat.
Right.
So that means a Nats pitcher is going to get on the mound. He's going to take the ball, and he's going to pitch it, and the visiting team might put it into play.
Right.
And the defense might make outs, or the visiting team might make runs.
Right.
You know, baseball, right?
Yeah, it's baseball. Right. Just what you then.
You play baseball. So what that means is that gets us to runs allowed, because in the top of the inning, the Nats will allow a run.
Right. Either zero or a number.
Or something not zero.
Right.
Right. The important thing is, okay, that's where runs allowed is going to come from. So if we can imagine a 162-game baseball season as one inning at Nats Park.
Right.
Right? And all of the lineup changes and turns of the rotation and errors and hits and all of that, all of this we're going to imagine as one season. Okay?
Right.
Okay. So we need to get the runs allowed in the top of the inning. So we need to figure out how many runs are going to be the pitcher's fault, and we're going to need to figure out how many runs we're going to charge to the defense behind the pitcher.
Right.
Right? Because we don't care about them. I mean, who cares about the other side? The Phillies anyway, right?
Right.
So that means I need stats that will give me a sense of how many runs a pitcher is likely to give up. And I need stats that'll give me how many runs the defense is likely to give up, and I need a sense of who's going to be playing in each of those positions for how long.
Right.
Okay.
So just to sort of probably shortcut this a little bit, you know that most of the starting pitchers are going to go five, six, seven innings. You can look at probably what their average number of innings a year is, and how many runs they tend to give up over those period of innings. And so you can do stuff like that, and then... I'm guessing adding in errors and how many stuff like that, or
well, yeah, the great thing is that the sabermetric revolution, or whatever they're calling it
right.
these days, has given us much finer tools for figuring out what we can charge to a pitcher and what we can charge to the defense.
Right. We started talking about this on the blog, actually, just to interject. If you follow Get to Know a Stat, you can learn about FIP and WHIP, which are, I feel like, nice little tools to kind of...
And initially, when I started projecting, I started using FIP, and that's a good way to start talking about how I think about pitchers. So with FIP, as you know, we count the things that are the pitcher's fault, the three true outcomes,
right.
as they say in the biz, and those are walks, right? Because a pitcher puts the batter
right.
on base. Batter didn't have to do a damn thing about that.
Right.
Then there are
home runs,
right? Well, the defense didn't touch that one.
I right. mean, for the most part. Yeah.
Right, that ball is gone.
Yeah.
And then there are strikeouts.
Right.
Because the defense didn't figure into that at all.
Right.
You know, Strasburg KZ, you sit down.
Right.
So, now, so that goes into FIP, which works out nicely. It looks like ERA. Right,
mm-hmm.
and we know that the earned run average is the old school baseball way of figuring out
right.
how many earned runs a pitcher is likely to give up every nine innings he's out there.
Yep.
Okay. So with FIP, it's the same thing, and every one of these pitchers is going to have a FIP, and so we set out and we list all of the pitchers by FIP, and then we figure out how many innings they're going to pitch.
Right.
And that we figure by, you know, looking at, you know, total innings and innings over the last several years, and certain things are very NAT specific, like pitchers under 25 tend to be limited to 120% of their maximum workload.
Right.
That seems to be an organization wide rule, which is how actually they arrived at 160 innings for Jordan Zimmermann
right.
and 160 innings for Steven Strasburg. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't an accident that they had a base of innings and
right.
they incremented it. So there. Now we've got – so once we do that, we have a good handle on how many runs the pitchers are going to be
– should be giving up,
are going to be giving up. But remember, all of those are runs that are defense independent.
Right.
So a good defense is going to come out and save runs. You want to imagine this like Ryan Zimmerman, you know, spearing a line drive. You want
right.
to imagine this – as Roger Bernardina saving the game
against Houston.
Against
yeah.
Houston.
Diving into the fence.
Or Jason Worth, you know, going above the fence, robbing the home run.
Right.
These are the, you know, the things that make you get up and holler at the park on defense. These are runs saved.
Right.
You know, we need a way of measuring that. And unfortunately, the way that we measure that in statistics is UZR, the ultimate zone rating, which is pretty, which let's be fair, is pretty opaque. You know, it's calculated by guys sitting in front of television monitors with grids superimposed, figuring out how far a fielder went to get that ball, and you know,
it's a whole thing. So let's just
set it aside. We'll have to take it as a black box.
Yeah.
You know. Now we know how many runs each player will save in that sense by position. So we know that Ryan Zimmerman at third base is worth so will save you so many runs by UZR.
Right.
And we know how many games he's likely to play. I use a 150 game baseline.
Right.
So once we have the total number of runs the pitcher would have allowed in our imaginary single inning.
Right.
Then we take the total number of runs his defense saves for him
right.
in our imaginary inning, and that gives us the total number of runs that are that the Nats have allowed
right.
in this hypothetical inning. Now, inning over, we all go back to the dugout, you know, go up, you get a beer, and now we're going to wait for the Nats to hit.
Right.
Now,
for a big 162 game
for,
half
for a,
inning.
Yeah, for yeah. a big 162 game half inning.
Right.
Now, fortunately, this is a little easier. FanGraphs categorizes a stat called weighted runs created.
Okay.
Which is a...
WRC.
RC,
right.
WRC, just like the television station.
Right.
And WRC will give you a sense of how many runs you can credit that batter. So all of it, you know, Denard Span getting on base, Denard Span stealing bases, Bryce Harper stealing home,
right?
You know, Ryan Zimmerman hitting walk-offs,
all doubles versus triples, triple, yeah,
taking the extra base, all of that's baked into the WRC pie.
Okay.
And what I do is I figure how many times these players are going to appear at the plate.
Right.
So I take the players' WRC over a period of time, mm-hmm. and divide it by the total number of plate appearances that he made.
Right.
And that gives me the number of runs that he's likely to score every time he steps in the box.
Right.
So you multiply that by the number of times that you think he's going to step in the box every year.
Right.
You know, every year. And that's going to give you the number of runs that you can attribute to him over the course of the year. Well, you add that all up, and you end up with the runs
scored by the team.
The runs scored by the team.
So now you got the runs they're going to give up. You got the runs that they're going to score. You plug it into the theorem.
Yeah, you plug it into
the win-run expectancy.
Yeah, to the Pythagorean win expectation, and you end up with a winning percentage.
Right. And now this year, you came up with a startling percentage.
Yeah, I was actually really shocked. Let me begin by saying that last year I was fantastically wrong.
probably important to know.
Right.
This is very important. This is very important. I predicted the Nats for 88 wins last year. And so when they hit 80,
that was August or September.
Right.
Yeah.
So when they hit 88 and there was still a lot of baseball to be played, I was frankly shocked. What I didn't see was was Ian Desmond, frankly.
Ian Desmond basically was a month, if he was healthy for the 6 weeks he wasn't healthy, would have been a top three MVP candidate. His year was absurd.
Yeah, I didn't see Ian Desmond. I did not anticipate Bryce Harper in the way that he arrived.
Well, you couldn't because there was nobody even knew when he was coming and if he was coming, and then I mean, how do you even put a number? How do you even put a number on that this year? Like all of his stuff has got to be skewed because it's based on like
last year,
last year's redonkulous.
Well, here, okay, so yeah. So you know that brings me into how am I getting these baseline numbers? And I thought to myself, okay, 1 year is ridiculous because you know you could be Jason Worth. And
right,
you know, 2010 Jason Worth was abysmal.
Right.
I mean, I resented Jason Worth terribly. Every time I walked under that enormous poster of him on the parking garage at Nats Park, I would look at it and think, wow, there he is making a strikeout or popping out.
I did make that joke about his bobblehead because it was the swinging bat.
Right.
Like, the ball is clearly behind him somewhere.
It's a strikeout, right? And obviously, that's you know that has changed. I mean, after Game 4, that impression has changed.
Yeah.
But the statistics bear that out also. So what I do when I prepare my projections is I take a 4-year trailing average. So I take the most recent year and I look 4 years back and I take the average for those 4 years. Now you know, Tango Tiger, Tom Tiger over at who wrote the book, one of the great statistical.
I'll find his website. Go ahead.
It wrote one of the great statistical manuals in baseball. Or has a projection system similar to this. He calls it the Marcells for Marcel the monkey, and because it's a dumb system, which is its great strength, and he uses weighted averages. So he weights the average for you know your most recent performance, but as Sweet Brown might say, "Ain't nobody got time for that." I just take a straight line trailing average.
Again, this is all for your mental.
Right. This is essentially therapy for me.
Right.
This is essentially therapy for me. I you know this makes me feel okay about Nigel Morgan.
Right.
Okay. And or Brian Rooney. And so I take a 4-year trailing average, and that's what I use my baseline projection.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper is really hard because last year there was no four-year trailing average.
It's just the one.
And there was no way to use his minor league because there's no way to figure out how comparable his minor league statistics
right.
were. And he was so short in the minors.
Right.
So I ended up with an extremely pessimistic outlook for Bryce Harper. I imagined that, well, he was 19. He's a really good kid, but the game might be too fast for him. I projected him as a straight average regular major league outfielder.
Okay. So you just were like, you know what? Let's be surprised if he does well in the projection.
Correct. And,
okay.
And so I plugged him in that way, and okay. I ended up with 88 wins.
Okay.
Now my system doesn't line up very nicely, or doesn't exactly line up with WAR or any of the other value statistics
VORP
that are out there.
Yeah,
VORP
yeah.
or any of the other things that are likely to cause you to end your evening alone at the end of the bar.
Don't worry, Nats 101. We're going to actually talk about some of these statistics one at a time.
Right.
As we go through the year.
So, but Bryce Harper had an obscenely good year, as anyone would tell you, and the wins above replacement statistics says that he was worth 4.5 or 4.6 wins.
Right.
Above a theoretical
replacement outfielder.
Yeah, AAA outfielder.
Right.
So
they need to name that person instead of wins above replacement. I feel like what, and I'm sorry, we're gonna digress. It's wins above replacement. It's not the wins above an average player. It's the wins above a person who would end up replacing him, which is why they use like a AAA.
I mean, you know, for Nats fans should imagine this as wins above Brian Bixler.
Exactly. Like, we need a name of a player we can say, oh, that's who we're talking about.
Right. So it would be like wins above Bixler or wins above.
We're gonna invent a new stat, the yeah. web, W, the two Bs.
Yeah, except that, you know, Bixler's still in the league, and I know I kind of like Bixler.
We need a Mendoza line guy,
right,
like Mendoza, like that made sense for everybody.
Right.
Like,
I mean,
he was a career 200 hitter.
I kind of like Bixler because he had the balls to show up with Adam Dunn's old walk up song.
Right.
Being this tiny little guy with a Julio Franco stance. sorry, listeners. This is very inside baseball now,
yeah.
I guess. But
it's all right. I recognized that danger when I brought you on. I'm like, this will get a little inside, but it's worth it. We got to start beefing everybody up. And
well, so
you all have Google. Go look it up.
Harper was
Julio
worth
Franco stance.
Harper was worth 4.6 wins above Bixler.
Right.
Let's call
yeah.
it that. And well, you know, that's 92 wins right there. And,
right.
And Desmond's absurd year was worth a couple of wins.
Right.
And that starts to get us in the neighborhood.
Right, 94, 95, 96, and of course the team wins 98.
Correct, which was shocking. Which
right.
Listeners, I was standing next to Frank at the moment that the Nats clinched, and there was a photograph of me attempting to hold my skull together.
Yeah.
Because my brain exploded. The Nats had clinched and were still on track to win way above 90 games.
Yeah, no, we were. That was a good night. That involved a strange bike ride home, and I drove you home. I don't know. That I get a couple of these nights mixed up because they were a lot of fun.
Right. These are the reasons you go to the park, right?
Yes.
Not to sit in your room in the cold of winter contemplating. Okay, how bad is it going to be? Because
right.
that's how this started, obviously.
Right.
So this year.
Right. Now you projected 88 wins last year and you were 10 wins under.
Correct.
So now what happened this year when you figured out how many runs, et cetera?
This year I had to change the model because I took a good look at what I was doing, and with the help of Dave Huzzard over at the Citizen
Nattown,
yep. Looked at the model again, and I discovered that I was first of all, I was undercounting playing time for hitters.
Okay. You weren't giving them enough at-bats.
I wasn't giving them enough plate appearances. Listeners, remember that here we care about plate appearances because, like, a walk isn't an at-bat.
Right.
Hit-by-pitch isn't an at-bat, right?
Pardon me for my misuse of the term, but
no,
you're
correct. No, it's Henry Chadwick's fault. You know, blame him.
Yep.
But, and of course, as you know, when you keep score, you will notice that the number one, two, three hitter tends to show up
more
in a game, right? So that wasn't being reflected. That wasn't being reflected in my model at all. So I needed to go and figure out, all right, what's the lineup going to be this year, and how many times are these guys going to show up at the plate?
Right. Everybody gets three turns at the plate in any given game. So every time you make a hit or a walk or something, the guys at the top of the order get one more, which is why they're going to end up with more hits and
more
walks,
hits, more walks, more home runs,
more chances for it anyway.
More,
right.
Yeah, more good things happen. This is why, by the way, listeners, that you don't put somebody like
why you build your batting order with the best batters at the top.
Well, yes, and why Ian Desmond was probably the most catastrophic leadoff hitter in the history of leadoff hitters.
Right,
because he was ready to party.
Yeah.
And leading off a baseball game is not the right time to party. So
let's do it. Swing, swing. Yeah.
Right. Please. I mean, and likewise, Danny Espinosa is even more ready to party. Danny Espinosa just likes
those guys are great where they are.
I mean, Danny Espinosa loves to party all the time. but so I needed to figure that out, and with the help of Baseball Reference, I discovered that there was the average number of plate appearances per spot in the batting order.
Gotcha.
So instead of arbitrarily saying that everyone's going to get 600 plate appearances, I was able to say, okay, Denard Span's going to get about 760 and so forth.
Right, down the line.
That was responsible for a tremendous increase in runs scored, as you can imagine.
Right.
Because Span, Worth, Harper suddenly get a lot more plate appearances.
Right.
Right? This was terrifying.
I remember you this night. You were very shook up by when you were like, it was almost. I'm trying to think of like the scientist who like discovers something and then instantly wants to destroy it. It was sort of
you know what I felt like.
Like man is not ready for this knowledge.
You know, it was I'm a kind of an opera geek, and there's an opera recently about J. Robert Oppenheimer and the atom bomb. And there's this tremendous aria where, you know, Oppenheimer is hoping that God prevents him from detonating this bomb.
The bomb, okay.
Much, right? This is how I felt.
Okay.
This is how I felt.
I think you need to – you've been trying to pull this Band-Aid off slowly. I think you need to just tell people what happened.
It turned out that the Nats were going to score an enormous amount of runs. They were going to score they were going to do enough to win 98 games.
this after the year, he predicted 88 and they won 98. So.
And I should tell you that all of these are projections. They're liable to error.
Obviously. What's the standard deviation on one of these? You figure.
The Pythagorean win expectation is generally thought to be good to within. At best, plus or minus 6 wins.
Okay, so really 92 to 104.
Right. Yes.
And you right. So if the Nationals won 104 games, you would your numbers would have been right.
Would have been close. Yeah. Would have been as we say here in Washington, close enough for government work.
Exactly.
And I was really scared. I'm frankly terrified because I have never rooted.
Again, this all comes from a place of hurt for Weege. He did this as a way to comfort himself and to cushion the blow. And now he is sitting here with a 98-win team who's looking to win, which I felt like they won a lot of one-run games last year. And I would, if they won 98 games again this year, that would be still amazing. It would be equally amazing that if they won the same number of games, because I feel like,
frankly, I'm still shocked when they win a game.
Right.
When Charlie goes bang zoom.
Let's play some Journey. Yeah.
It's, right. I'm ecstatic.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember because it was a real talk because it was sort of like I've got them at 95 wins and then you're like, oh, shoot, I need to adjust for X. And so you updated in one night like 3 times your win total.
I did.
And you were very nervous, which is why I sent you the there's a cute little picture. I'm just going to toot my own horn. I sent him a Batman picture of Robin, the slapping Batman picture with Robin going, it's insane to predict 98 wins. And Batman's going, don't doubt the bat computer. And he's smacking him.
I mean, listeners, you must understand that I have never rooted for a baseball team that's been this good ever.
Yeah.
I've never rooted for one. I've never played on one. I have never been associated with baseball of this quality in my life.
And in most cases, neither of you, I'm thinking. The people who are listening, I mean, this is a special, which just to circle back briefly to punditry, that is a lot of how it works, not in how you do it, but, you know, the Miami Marlins and the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Toronto Blue Jays are full of people who individually have, like, these track records. And so the inherent error of just sort of adding up stars versus not stars and looking at how much, quote-unquote, better a team got talent-wise isn't the same thing as kind of parsing, you know, figuring out how many plate appearances they're going to have, how many runs do you think they're going to score, do these people, are they in positions where they're going to, you know, save runs versus give up runs in the field.
Exactly, that's an excellent point. I was emotionally devastated, for instance, when Michael Morse left Washington.
Absolutely. We all were emotionally devastated.
I was devastated. I mean, who am I going to sing to now? Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, I have a very complicated emotional relationship with the home team. But I comforted myself with statistics, and the comfort was this. Michael Morse is a terrible defensive outfielder.
He's a really bad defensive outfielder.
He's the only defensive outfielder in the National League East, the guys who we're most familiar with, that I can think of who is a worse defensive outfielder, is Lucas Duda of the Mets, who is a comedy show of his own.
He looks like he got punched in the face.
Look,
his
man,
picture at Nats Park is awful.
Lucas Duda is like a segment from the Benny Hill Show. Okay? And this is reflective in Duda's and Morse's very, very poor UZR numbers.
Right.
In UZR, listeners, a negative number means that you save negative runs. That
right.
means you're responsible for the other
team. You're costing
scoring.
The team.
Right.
Yeah, you're costing the team in the field.
So Morse was in the negative double digits as an outfielder.
Right. He was costing a lot of runs.
And I hate to go back to a bad moment in game five, but there was a dying quail hit into the left field corner.
There are 1,000 things wrong with game five. Go ahead. This one's fine.
There's a dying quail hit into the left field corner, and you saw it, and I saw it, and all of us saw it, and it was an eternity before Morse could get to the
ball. Yeah.
And it was an eternity before the ball got back into the infield.
Yeah.
And, you know, meanwhile, we were all screaming and hollering, and it was awful.
Yeah.
It was just really bad. But I love Morse, but I comforted myself. The ball club, which is the only thing that I can hold on to at this point, is better. And I hope that Morse makes his new ball club better, because his new ball club needed bats.
Right.
So this is how I feel that statistics and an understanding of statistics and an understanding of data in baseball will make you feel better about the game.
It cushions the blow a little. And you also understand, I mean, you can appreciate Michael Morse for who he is by understanding him a little bit better.
Exactly.
So this has been a fantastic podcast, but we are running way long on time comparatively, which is fine because it was completely informative. So I'm not saying anything negative about this. I just realized that we are taxing our listeners. Susan, thank you so much for all your input today.
I told you. I was just going to sit back.
No, Susan said she was going to sit back and relax. Do you want to... first of all, I want to thank again Luigi for coming on the show. We've been talking about this for a while. His blog is natstradamus.wordpress.com. We'll link to it on our website.
Follow at Ouij. That's at O-U-I-J.
O-U-I-J. Look for the Dr. Doom avatar. Are you changing it or no?
I was thinking about going with the Mandarin this year.
Yeah.
But I
think Iron Man 3 tie-in.
I think I might defer a decision on that to opening day.
I think that's fair. I think you don't have to make any decisions right now.
Okay.
I'm also a Kang the Conqueror fan.
You know, my other choice was really Ming the Merciless from Flash Gordon.
They're Marvel. Yeah. Well, Marvel on a whole is great. Ming the Merciless is also excellent.
Right.
And also comes with a Queen soundtrack, which we know you are a fan of the Queen, as am I.
It would be my reliever walk-up song.
Yeah. But thanks again for coming. You should come do this again.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
We won't make you explain yourself so thoroughly next time. We'll just talk about baseball next time, as opposed to having you, you know, go through that. But if you go to his blog post, he actually, you know, he writes out a lot of the numbers and a lot of the things. Obviously, they're there, and you can follow along. You can do the math yourself. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, and
you can flame me too. And the critical comments are the best, by the way.
I think I asked some question, and you're like, no, I did not account for that. And it was the response was like, and I'm not about to, because it's the fourth time I've revised it this month.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Right. And you're going to be posting some National League.
Yes. As we get closer to opening day, and as our great enemies in the National League East begin to form up their teams
properly,
I will be running this same model on them to figure out where they are.
Start
they
adding
stand.
Up all those strikeouts by the Upton brothers now.
And so. It will be interesting. I'm looking forward to see how I line up with Matt's bats, who came up with an excellent NL East preview.
He did. We need to get Matt on the program. I think when school's over.
Yeah.
We know people who know people who know him, right?
Yes.
And we've met him ourselves, obviously, but we can figure that out. No, it's a really great preview. And as a person who bought five or six magazines and the Baseball Prospectus, and we wrote for the Sits and Nats Town annual, which if you haven't bought and you want to buy, you should buy. It's only a couple of dollars. It's certainly the cheapest one you can buy, and it's pretty good.
Strasburg isn't playing left field.
No, he's not. And I have that magazine. And that's the worst thing about buying the magazines is you get a little bit of information, but not a lot. And then they do terrible things like have Strasburg in left field and or they don't know who's on the team yet. So they're like they just are throwing stuff out there. So it's one thing to just sort of have the Nats, you know, picked once. The only guy who didn't have the Nats in the playoffs this year was Nightingale, who's a Philadelphia writer. And he has
that's shocking.
And he has Atlanta and Philly. And I think he had Philly in the wild card and Atlanta winning. And
that's shocking.
Yeah. Right. Anyway. Yeah. The prospectus is a very good one, but if you're talking about free stuff and you're talking about thought-out Nationals-oriented stuff, Nats-tradamus is an excellent way to go. So we're going to have you back.
Thank you.
Okay. Susan, get us out of here. Give us some information about where to get a hold of us and what to do.
Absolutely. If you want to give us a comment or have a question or whatever, give us an email at nationals101@gmail.com. You can check out the blog that Frank does an amazing job with at nats101.com. Twitter, at Nationals101.
Yep, iTunes.
Nationals101.
Just search it. Nationals. The only place we're not Nationals 101 is directly on the web where we're Nats 101.
That's right.
Same with Facebook and stuff.
That's it? That's
yeah, I mean, if you could just...
The season starts in a week?
The only thing I want to say is I'd like to apologize for how many times you Susan, interrupted Luigi. And I mean, if you could just be nicer to our guests, I think we'd have...
Yeah, I have a really bad habit of just...
No, you were...
Listeners, Susan was kicking me under the shin.
She was.
Me on the table,
she was.
The
I was busy looking up things on Home Depot.
Yeah, for our new... We now have housing things to worry about. But we promise more Susan next time. Okay?
If that's what you want.
You were a little... You were,
I mean,
you
I
were
don't
a little,
know.
You were a little preoccupied and we let you check out. But I know that there are people that listen for you. So I feel bad that, you know... But at the same token, they
I'll
got Luigi.
I'll be back
so,
next
all right.
week when the season actually starts.
Anyway, until next time, thanks again, Luigi.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks,
All
Susan.
Right. I'm Frank.
I'm Susan.
Have a good night, everyone.
Bye.